Hello, Marquette basketball fans. Welcome to another edition of the Golden Break. I'm your host, Adam Woke. Shout out to the production team, Matt Mikus, Jeff Gibellina, Dr. Michael Keegan. We're rolling in cash money from that Seton Hall game. Very excited to have Ben on with us today. But also, don't forget, this weekend, Tyler Kolek is joining the pod. I cannot wait to bring that to you. But first, today, we're here with Ben Steele from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Let's kick it over to him. All right, Ben is back, people. He's back on the pod. Ben, it's been a minute. That's on me. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, I've been, I'm not going to say my feelings were hurt, but, you know, I've been waiting waiting for the old Zoom invite to pop into my email box. Is that, who's the most frequent guest? Have I beat Diener yet?
You still have one on Diener. So I guess that makes you the best friend of the pod. So that's still, I know it's been a minute, but that's still a good status, I think, here at the Golden Break. Now, Ben,
I'll take whatever I can get.
Absolutely. So you're stuck out there in Providence right now, huh?
Well, yeah, I'm here in Providence, not stuck yet. The snow is supposed to start. This is Thursday that we're recording this. Snow is going to be Friday evening and then like an all day Saturday fiasco. So I gotta scrounge up some rations and just barricade myself in the Hilton Garden Inn here in beautiful Providence and try to ride it out.
And I want to make sure it's 11:30 Central, correct?
Right. Yeah.
Correct. Okay. I saw 12:30 a lot of places, and I was looking. I just wanted to verify because, you know, the people out there in Marquette basketball land, they want to make sure they're on time when they're watching the game.
Yeah. So FS1 televised.
Good.
30 Central.
So, Ben, dude, I haven't talked to you since November, and the tenor of our conversation was very different. I got to ask, in your time covering Marquette basketball, is this the best team you've seen?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the only thing that would rival it is the 2018-2019, you know, the Marcus, Sam, and Joey Hauser team. And, you know, everyone knows how that ended. So, you know, that's not one that people look back fondly on. But, I mean, when they were rolling, man, that team had some beautiful stretches of basketball when they were knocking down shots, and they were one of the most efficient offenses in the nation. It ended badly for that team, but they had some great moments. But this one, I think it's a combination of just how good they're playing and then just like the narrative of like, no one saw this coming. No one saw this kind of, I mean, you could kind of, you know, like look at Shaka Smart's record as a head coach. Like he's a proven head coach. Like he's 13 years of evidence that he's a good basketball coach. So like you kind of figure like the improvement would come, but at this rate with how good they're playing and how good they look. Yeah. I did not see this coming.
And, you know, I think compared to the 2018 team, like these dudes here just seem locked in, like as a unit, the things they do as a unit, because even in 2018, like, we knew we were riding the shooting of Marcus Howard. Like, I didn't feel good about the system like I do here. You feel that, especially a guy who's been, you know, in 2018, it was pre-COVID, you got to be out on the beat. So, you know, what was the vibe between those two teams? How was that different?
Yeah, I think the difference with this team is definitely on the defensive end. You know, we talked about how offensively great that 2018-19 team was, but they were okay defensively. I can't remember what their finish. I think that was the best KenPom finish in the Wojo era, but it was only like, I don't know, 40 something. I'd have to look it up, but this year's team, it's just like they're connected. There's like, you know, it's so deep and like there's different starring guys each night. It's not like one man, like mostly that 18-19 team, and it really, like throughout his time at Marquette, really, really relied on Marcus to get buckets. And he was good at it, like one of the best I've ever seen, but that's a lot of pressure on one dude. And this team, like, they just got a lot of different guys that can that can play. They play really well together. I think that's probably one of the most pleasant things to watch about this team is how well they share the basketball. Like during the 7-game winning streak, I think 4 or 5 of the games, they've had 20 or more assists. They're second in the nation and field goals that come off of assists, which is like, that's the basketball that's funnest to watch and that's contagious. And you can tell like everyone's just kind of bought into to playing together. And that extends on both ends of the floor. Like I was talking about, like this team is really connected on the defensive end. And that's what gets you winning streaks because, the offense comes and goes, but that if you got a solid defensive team, you always got a chance to win.
Ben, correct me if I'm wrong. You get a top 25 AP vote, correct?
Correct, yes.
Can you take us through your process when you're sitting down and you're looking at teams and you're putting that together? What's that like for you? And can you get me a vote so I can vote for Marquette 25 times?
Yeah, it's not one thing I should point out. I don't get paid to do that. This is like strictly a voluntary thing. So just so people know, when they say it's literally your job to rank teams, I'm like, no, I don't really get paid for that. So it's not literally my job. Just to clear that up. But you vote Monday mornings. The ballots due at 10 a.m. Eastern time Monday morning. So usually I'm watching it throughout the week, like watching results. Obviously, I'm busy. I got Marquette takes up most of my time, so I try to watch like 3 or 4 games a day, just like on YouTube or DVR games. But that gets hard during the season. Just I'm traveling. It's like I got a lot of stuff going on, doing stories all the time. So I try to watch all the top teams at least. I'm on KenPom every day for my job, so I'm studying teams that way. So I kind of have a feel for how things are going, and I study, like I try to read. I read a lot of stories on The Athletic and Gary Parrish at CBS. He does a top 25 every day, so I usually scan that at least 2 or 3 times a week. And he has numbers in there that I'm thinking about all the time, and so that all comes together Monday morning. And there's like, you log into the site, there's a little drop down menu. It's easy to screw up. Like I've screwed up a couple of times. Like you got to type in, like, I'm trying to think of the one I almost screwed up a couple years ago.
I love that. That makes us feel better when we're mad at the rankings. Yeah, like, no, hey, someone made a mistake. No, those drop down boxes can be crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I typed in like, I was typing in like Michigan State, but I hit an S and I had like Mississippi, who was like, 0-8 or something at the time as like the number 8 team, until like the guy, there used to be a guy that like would look through ballots, and if he saw something crazy, like he knew you just screwed up, so he'd call you. But he doesn't work there anymore, I don't think. So it's you're on your own now. So I can see how the screw ups happen, and I've definitely screwed up a couple things before, but it happens.
So let me ask you, and I appreciate you kind of going through that process, but also too, for you, like your rationale, I think it's the same thing, when you hear some of the guys talk about like the Hall of Fame ballot, right? Yeah. I listen to a lot of guys on the radio say, here's my approach. Like, here's what I value. Here's what I think is important. So I think it's kind of cool to hear what you do and go through that. So as you're seeing these things, I think Marquette is appropriately ranked, in my opinion. I think they belong up in that area. But that doesn't also dictate who actually is the best team in the country, because Marquette's the perfect story where this team shouldn't have been really good. They should have had this roller coaster. Mm-hmm. Getting to where they are now is such a different team than they were earlier. Do you think this team can compete with the Gonzagas, the Purdue's?
Oh, they might be maybe a step below those teams as far as just pure talent, scoring talent, efficiency, offensive efficiency talent. I don't know if they can quite hang with those teams. I mean, they're good enough defensively that if you got the right night, like things broke right, I wouldn't be shocked if they'd be one of those teams. But, if it was a series, I wouldn't take Marquette in a series, you know, but the, you know, this is college basketball. If you're talking about a tournament setting, like Marquette's a dangerous team because they got a good defense and they got a, you know, a well-balanced offense that, you know, finds the hot hand and all that. So yeah, in a tournament setting, I, you know, I wouldn't be surprised by anything, but you know, I've been around a long time. I've seen a lot of crazy stuff. So
Justin Lewis, I think we have to talk about Justin. You know, he's really started to show a skill set to me of an NBA player with the way he can score in a variety of different ways. And to me, I think, in my opinion, it has a lot to do with his relationship with Shaka Smart. You know, he seems to really understand him. What have you kind of gleaned from that relationship that you think has helped unleash this game for Justin?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Shaka's got him playing on the perimeter more than he ever has in his career. And Shaka's like, he pushes those guys hard. He's a different kind of personality. He's not like the, you know, the stereotypical authoritative college basketball coach, like the yeller and screamer type guy. And he pushes the guys hard. Like he's tough on him, but he's not like a yeller and screamer type from what I've seen. Like, again, I'm not around, I'm not behind closed doors all the time. So I don't know. I'm not going to definitively say it, that kind of thing, but you could tell just by the way, when I first saw Justin in person this year, just the way his body looked, like it was like, Justin's always had like a really impressive physical profile. He's got the long arms. He's got huge hands. His legs are like super strong when you see him. Like they're just like thick oak trees, you know? But he was much more leaner when I saw him today. And he just looked like an NBA guy when I saw him in person for the first time when they started practicing this year. And I think that's, you know, Shaka gets those guys, especially in those preseason, you know, summer months and early fall months, he gets those guys in elite shape because you got to be in elite shape to play his kind of style of play. Right. So I think that kind of work ethic, it's just ratcheted up to like, you know, the nth degree under Shaka, and he's put him in good positions. And you see it like now Justin definitely last year, he flashed a talent. I mean, everyone could see that, but he looked tired at times, like when he was playing, he didn't look like he was in elite shape. And now you can see, like, he gets stronger at the end of games, like the end of the Villanova game is the famous example of that. And then, you know, once you start having those kind of successes, that's when the confidence comes. And you, what happens after that is what we saw against Seton Hall, you know, when the dude just takes over, has a career game, 33 points and 6 assists. The passing was really good. That's what I was impressed more with yesterday against Seton Hall. Like I was sitting behind the basket and it was a little obscured by the basket sanction. So I couldn't really, if you were on the court in a certain area, I couldn't see you like playing out there. I missed, like he had a steal early in the game and he hit Omax with like right in stride on a fast break for the dunk. I couldn't see that in person. And when I got back to the hotel room, like FS1 was playing the replay of the game. And, you know, it was like glorious. I could see like the whole court and like from mid court. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. And I saw that play. I was like, wow, that was a like amazing pass, like perfectly hit him in stride. So those are the kind of plays that are impressive, man. That he's just got the confidence rolling.
Dude, we talk all the time, and I like try to go out of my way to talk about Justin Lewis's passing when we talk on the production team, because I think it's probably one of the most underrated parts of his game. And it was something that I was saying on the pod last year that I was like, man, because he played so much of this back to the hoop under Woj. Mm-hmm. He was really good at those little dunk bounce passes, right, to cutters. And now that we have actual real cutters under Shaka's offense, not like one a possession under Woj, he's got options. And I think that's really cool. You know, you said you saw an NBA body. He is flying up draft boards when we look at him as an NBA prospect. What are you seeing as far as his to talk about around him about what his prospect could be in a draft? And do you think he stays another year?
Yeah, I mean, I think he'd be smart. I think everyone would tell him, like, at least, like, put your name in the draft, go through the process, get the official evaluations this summer or this spring. Yeah, there were a lot of NBA scouts at the Seton Hall game last night, so they're very impressed, obviously, with the shooting. Obviously, is the big kind of swing issue with him, and it's gotten a lot better. The 3-point, his form's always been good, and like he's get good rotation on the shot. It just like his numbers just were pretty abysmal, like up until like 3 or 4 weeks ago. But now with that confidence that he's gotten, the shots are starting to fall. I think he's got, you know, being a 6'7" guy at the NBA level, you got to guard some really good dudes, man. Like I don't think he has quite there with the quickness yet to guard like 6'7", 6'6", small forwards, stretch fours in the league. So I think he's got a ways to go on the defensive end. I'm sure that's what any scout would tell him. I'm sure that's what the Marquette coaching staff would tell him. And then, you know, he might be like, you see him in some mock drafts, like the guys I like to read, like the ESPN, Gavoni and Schmitz, those guys are really good. Sam Vecenie at the Athletic. You see him kind of in that late first round, some early second. He might rise a little bit. I don't know if he quite reached the lottery level this year for sure. So then you got to decide, you know, what do you want to do? And it'll be interesting this year with the NIL money, whether, you know, I think like the biggest issue with college basketball the last couple of years is like the fringe talents would leave college, even if, you know, they weren't getting drafted at all. They just need a paycheck somewhere, like play in Europe, play in the G League. But now you're getting, you know, some of these guys are getting a decent amount of money with the NIL. Might be wiser to stay in college. So it'll be interesting to watch, see if Justin, see how his situation develops along that front. Yeah. And so right now I would say it's probably like a late first round kind of pick, and he's got to decide what he wants to do. Like I could see him like developing into a lottery talent. If you see like the leaps he made this year, if he does another one of these leaps next year, you know, and then, so it's a, yep. You know, that's a personal decision. That's what he's got to decide.
I think that's the most important point, is the leap he made. I think when players show growth like that, or they recognize it in themselves, they can see one more year really could propel me forward in my career completely, whether it's getting your draft status up. I also think like when you play in college a little bit longer and you get a little bit more confidence on both sides of the ball, when you go to the NBA, you're going to feel more confidence. There are guys who get crushed in their first year by the pressure, by the feel. There are guys that absolutely, and I bet there are, you will never know who they are, but there are guys who got crushed and overwhelmed in their first year and just petered out in their career. We'll never know who those guys are, right? But it's a reality of it. Yeah, so I do think, especially with Shaka, it would be good for him to be under him for one more year.
Absolutely.
I think for all those physical reasons and the emotional confidence part.
Yeah. And Justin still, he's only 19 years old.
Yeah, I know.
Crazy. Nuts. So he's got a long way. He's still got a long way in his physical development too. And you know, it'll be interesting.
Well, speaking of his development, let's talk about something I want to see him get better at, and that's rebounds. But I want to talk about it for the team. It's been the Achilles heel this year. There's no doubt about that. We've talked about it on the pod. When this topic comes up around the coaches, the players, they know. I mean, obviously, no one's surprising them with it, right? Yeah. But what's the tenor in the locker room on that topic specifically?
Yeah, when I've asked Shaq about it, like, he just wants guys to just go up and grab it. Like, you see, like, Kerr and Osa, they kind of slap it around a little bit. They don't, like, just grab it with two hands. And, you know, I think that's the biggest thing that they want to see. Yeah, I mean, Justin's obviously probably the best rebounder on the team, but he's playing a lot on the perimeter, you know? So it's like, it's a little different position for him to rebound from than the bigger guys or what he was playing like last year, like you mentioned, like underneath the basket. And Kerr and Osa, man, those guys are bouncy, but they're skinny, you know, they get pushed around a little bit. So there's nothing that's going to change on that front dramatically in the next couple months. So they're just going to have to figure it out. And I think like Marquette's guards are actually pretty good rebounders, like Daryl and Tyler's really good rebounder for his size, especially. So those guys chip in a little more. Big guys figure out how to grab the ball, secure it. I don't know if this team will ever be a great rebounding team, but, you know, they can get better.
Kerr and Oso, let's stick on them for a minute, because I'm starting to see, I want to see if you're seeing this as well. It seems like with Kerr and Oso down the stretch, he's going with the hot hand.
Yeah.
You know, foul trouble will obviously dictate things from time to time, and that's understandable, but also nice to have maybe some interchangeable pieces, because those guys can give you some similar things out there, a consistency of what you can expect from them. And that's really nice to have. I feel like that's what he's doing at the end of, Shaka's doing at the end of games. Are you seeing that too?
Yeah, that, I think that goes to every position, not just the big guys. Like Daryl didn't play a lot last game just because like it wasn't his best game against Seton Hall, and he looked a little frustrated out there. And so Shaka went with Cam Jones down the stretch, and you know, Cam's not afraid of the moment. Hit some big shots down the stretch. Yeah, the big guys you saw yesterday, you know, Kerr was awesome at the beginning of the game, had those huge blocks, set the tone defensively. Yeah. Oso came in for like 20 seconds. He like screwed up a couple things, and Shaka pulled him immediately. But when he came back in, he was a lot better. And I think Oso played a lot in the closing lineup yesterday, even though Kerr was so good at the beginning of the game. So yeah, like you said, like it's a real good feel. Like Shaka always talks about, like he knows just from body language, or he does a lot by feel. So yeah, it's that's definitely something to watch. Something interesting every game.
That's a good point about how he does that with a lot of the players. And you're right. He, and that flexibility, I think, is going to serve us well down the road. A guy that also kind of swaps in and out with Omax is Elliot. And when we last talked, he was really having a slow start in the season. And there is no doubt that that man has turned the corner. There is no doubt about that. What is different about Elliot under Shaka than Woj?
He's getting more playing time. And Shaka just lets him fly, man. Just tells those guys to shoot it. I think he got mad at Greg a couple times the last couple games because he didn't shoot enough. Those guys always have the green light. And when you have that kind of confidence, man, you see the results happen. When your coach has that kind of confidence in you. He's still basically the same kind of player that he's always been, just the spot up shooter and versatile defensive guy, really smart player, doesn't really make a lot of mistakes with the ball, makes good passes. And I don't know if he's changed dramatically, except, you know, he just puts it up a lot now. Marquette gets up and down and there's more possessions. There's more shots to be had out there. And he's thriving in that kind of system.
Who's emerging as a leader in the locker room right now? And of the young guys, who do you see being a future leader on this team?
Yeah, I mean, the older guys that everyone looks at, Daryl's like the tough guy that everyone looks up to. Greg's been around, because Greg's been in college basketball for 5 years, man. He's seen everything. So he's a guy that all the young people talk to. He's a cool dude too. So like, you know, people like talking with Greg. The young guys, that's interesting. Like, I think, you know, Cam and Stevie Mitchell, those guys are just interesting in that they're kind of different personality wise. Like on the court, you know, like I said, Cam's not afraid to, you know, pull up from anywhere, anytime, any point in the shot clock. Fast break, no one back, he'll pull up for three. Stevie's more like the cerebral, kind of defensive-minded player, still hasn't found his way on the offensive end yet. I mean, those guys are going to be the kind of like the future backcourt. Tyler's kind of like the in-between guy. You know, he's been around, he played last year at George Mason, but he's definitely a guy that's tough on the court that people look up to, and, you know, he gets him the ball. So everyone likes Tyler. So, those are all the kind of dynamics. I wouldn't say that like there's one like alpha dog, if I had to choose an alpha dog, I'd probably say Daryl's probably the guy.
I want to talk Shaka's coaching staff, because when you dive into the resumes of some of these guys, there's some impressive guys on those bench, some guys who've done some things, I think, at places that as assistants that have turned out really well. You know, we had Nevada on, and I was really just impressed in the way that he talked about what they were trying to accomplish in the offense. And it's interesting, if you go back and listen to what he said in that pod, you can very much, the things he said that they were trying to get to are the things where they're at today as an offense. What are you seeing out of Shaka's coaching staff? Who's really standing out to you?
Yeah, I mean, all those guys are really good. I mean, all those guys, you know, the life of a college basketball coach is like a never ending grind, man. That's 365 days a year and 18 hours a day. It's crazy, man. You got to be a weird personality type to get into that line of work. But yeah, all those guys, Nevada, you know, he's a really sharp offensive mind, offensive guru, how he's referred to in most stories. DeAndre Haynes is a really good developer of guards. He worked with Jordan Poole, Milwaukee guy at Michigan. He's worked with guys at Maryland. That's where he comes from. Kind of his specialty is developing guards. And you see how well Marquette's young guards have come along this year. Neil Berry works with the big guys a lot. Oso, and you see him, like, if you come to the games early during warmups, Neil Berry will like huddle with Oso and Kerr and Kian Edijari, who's redshirting this year. Which, by the way, if you ever come early to Marquette games, you should watch Kian warm up, because his springs are like off the charts, man. His leaping ability is crazy. Like, it's just fun to watch him. Just like, he's got that easy kind of easy 40-inch vertical. It just looks cool to watch. We'll see how his basketball skills develop, but like his leaping ability is off the charts. Yeah. So Neil works with the big guys. Cody Hatt's another assistant. He's a big relationship guy. Shaka's mentioned in a couple of post-game press conferences, real tight relationship that Cody has built with Justin, kind of pushing him on and off the court. And those guys have become real tight. This is their first year, obviously, working together, and they've developed a tight bond. It seems like, yeah, I mean, typical hardworking college basketball staff. It's more of a lifestyle. Like I said, like that becomes your life. It's a crazy job. That's why you see a lot of like coaches bring their families around the program, because that would be like the only time they would see them, you know, just because of the hours that they put in.
Were you in the house for the Nova game?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what was going on with the fans in Tyler? Oh, there like, yeah, a little, what was going on out there?
Yeah.
You know, I love that stuff. I eat that stuff up. That's, I think, some of the most fun parts of college basketball, yeah, right? Those little things that happen at the games.
Yeah. I actually talked to Tyler about that the other day for a story that's coming out soon, if you allow me to plug.
Yeah. So you hear that story. Yeah. Hey, we're going to plug that. I'm plugging Tyler coming on the show this weekend. Yeah. So we're going to be really, Tyler, we're here for you.
Yeah, we're Tyler heavy. Yeah, you know, Tyler's the kind of guy that opposing fans love to hate. Like, every road game, they're after him a lot. I'm sure Marquette fans remember him singing the Country Roads songs at the Charleston Classic. The Kansas State fans at Kansas State, they were giving it to him pretty good, and he was giving it right back to them. He's not afraid to like getting that back and forth with the fans. Yeah. And the Villanova game, Tyler said, I didn't even do anything. They were just on him from the beginning. They just singled him out as the guy, you know, just like, I asked him if it was just, you know, just cause he like looks like one of them, you know, cause he doesn't look like, you know, you wouldn't pick him out of a police lineup as a basketball player. So I think that's why fans kind of zero in on him a little bit, but he's funny, man. Yeah, he gives it right back, and he feeds off of it. So like, opposing fans, you know, it's a do it at your own peril to make him angry.
Well, I'm going to ask him tomorrow how sweet it had to feel, because sometimes you got to really enjoy that.
He blew a kiss to him after the game, right? Like somebody yeah. caught him on video.
Oh, it was awesome. It was awesome. Before I let you go, it's always recruiting season in college basketball. What's Marquette's scholarship situation, and who are some players that is still on, how the MU was still on their list?
Yeah, I saw. So Marquette's got 12 guys on scholarship this year. You're allowed 13. So Kerr and Darryl are gone, obviously, after this year. This is their last year of eligibility. Greg can come back if he wants to. He's got one more year, amazingly, if you can believe that. But he would count against the scholarship. It was only like this year's seniors wouldn't count against. If they came back, you know, last year's seniors, if they came back for this year, they wouldn't count that extra year as a scholarship. But Greg would, since you could plan for it, Greg counts as a scholarship if he chooses to return. He hasn't said whether he'd want to or not. We'll see how that situation plays out. So that gives him some openings there. I don't know if they'll add another 2022 guy. I saw today that they're bringing in some foreign guy for a visit. I think he's from New Zealand, Ben Gold. It's like a power forward, which is kind of, you know, maybe they're trying to hedge their bets. If Justin leaves for the pros, they might need to bolster the backcourt a little bit. So he would be the only 2022. I don't see him adding another one except for him, maybe. 2023, like, they got crazy amount of offers there. It's probably too early to narrow down anybody. This will be like the full recruiting cycle for what they want at Marquette. It'll be interesting to see. But I think of like big guys, I don't know, you know, with Curly even, they definitely have to add somebody in the front court. I don't know if they'd want to do that by transfer. That's the kind of the dance that college basketball coaches have to decide now, whether they want a bigger body that's been developed in college and get somebody in the transfer portal or get a high school recruit in there. It's kind of interesting to watch that kind of stuff. That's all I know. But, you know, like I said, I'm not privy to all that information. It's just kind of what I glean from here and there and conversations and stuff.
Ben, I lied to you. I've got one more question.
No, keep for it going. You, I'm here. I'm stuck in Providence, man. I got nowhere to go.
Hey, all right. Well, then maybe I got some more, but I do have one. There's one other thing that popped up in my head that I do want to ask you about, and that's the NIL. What are some of the early effects you're seeing with NIL in college basketball? And especially as we go into this next season of recruiting, but also too, like, can teams leverage NIL to say, hey, let me make it worth your while to stay another year, not just for development, but listen, here's some local things that we've partnered with. Like, here's some money in your pocket, because I also know you want to get paid and you want to go, you know, that there's a huge check at the other end of that decision for Justin Lewis. And I understand people who say it's my time to go make my money. Like, you're a pro athlete. Like, you should definitely go and do that.
Yes.
So maybe there's a way to, like, I don't know. What are you seeing? Like, what are teams' involvements with the way that NIL, I don't even want to use the word leverage. I don't know how to talk about NIL, right? Like, I see this going bad maybe in some ways, but I also see the huge benefit for, like, I love that they're getting paid.
Yeah.
I think they should get paid. I think they should get paid a lot more than just what the NIL throws out there. But I'm just interested on how it's fitting.
Yeah. Well, you know, by the letter of the law, teams aren't supposed to facilitate deals for players. Players are supposed to get those on their, it's supposed to, their players are supposed to do that all on their own. Now, you know, college basketball, not well known for following the rules to the letter of the law. So, and I'm not saying Marquette, I'm not.
No, but this is a general. So we're maybe talking. We're talking in general here, and I think it's a fair conversation. Listen, we could go down if you want. We could go and Google right now all the different violations that are out there that we know are the tip of the iceberg, right? Like, I think we could talk about it in general, but you're right. Like, they can't by letter of the law. We don't know that teams are, but I can see them like wanting to.
There's definitely like boosters at school that at various schools that will insert themselves in that kind of business. And you see like Kentucky guys are getting car dealership deals and stuff like that. I think it's still like early. It's still like, this is the first year of it. So it's kind of all over the map. And, you know, with Marquette specifically, I know like Justin Lewis has the deal with Uncle Buck's Tavern from across the Fiserv Forum way. I'm not sure what exactly the numbers are with that. It'd be interesting if I could find that out. But, you know, any money is better than zero money that they weren't making before.
For sure.
So, and, you know, deals that, I mean, now that Marquette's hot, you know, that they're one of the hottest teams in the country, maybe that brings in more deals now, because like 2 months ago, who knew who Cam Jones was? Who knew who, you know, any of the Olivier Maxence Prosper, you know, no one knew who these guys were. And now they're one of the hottest teams in the nation. Maybe there's more, you know, local coverage, more local deals to be had. It's hard to put a finger on it just because it's so new. And like I mentioned before, I think like this could be good for college basketball, that it gets those fringe talents to say for another year or two and develop themselves at the college level, make a name for themselves at the college level, and then go pro and go try to play in the G League. Whereas, you know, in the last couple of years, people have just been jumping just to get the paycheck. Now it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. It's so new, man. It's hard to get everything, get a handle.
But really, yeah. I mean, the effects are sort of happening probably in ways that we're also not seeing right now. And things you learn about 5 years later when someone does that piece about the start of NIL and the truth comes out. Right. And things like that. But
it is cool. Like it is cool when you go to Fiserv and you see, like, you could see like, you know, number 10 jerseys with Lewis on the back now, that you didn't never see that before. And I don't know what percentage there the players get off of that. But it is cool. Like you see the Stevie Mitchell jerseys and you see, you know, all that stuff. You see the student section and everyone's wearing their favorite jerseys. And now like players are getting a cut of that, which is cool.
Yeah, that is, it is fantastic. And, you know, it's going to be interesting too with the transfer portal. Because, you know, when you see a team like Alabama, that it comes out that the quarterback was making, I think, like a $1 million deal with Nike, right? Like that doesn't accidentally leak. Like, you know, like that doesn't accidentally come out. Like there's a benefit to teams and stories like that coming out when you are looking to transfer too, to say, hey, you know, look at over here. Not only are we building this, but we also have this. This is out there. Not that I'm leveraging the deal, but like you could talk about what players average and what they make in your NIL. And so it's going to be interesting as a recruiting tool. And I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. I'm not advocating for it to happen, but it's a reality that I think we're facing in this, that we just haven't sort of seen unfold yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's just so new. And so like no one seems to quite have a handle on it. Not just us. I don't think anybody in college sports quite has a handle on it yet. So,
We're going to see if Shaka has a handle on it very soon here. Ben, dude, thank you so much. And hopefully we see you. Maybe if you make it out, Ben's going to try to make it out to the live pod on February 26th, but maybe not. But if he is, Ben,
speaking of NIL money, if you see me at the bar, I am open for business as far as free beers. I will take that as far as my name, image, and likeness.
Well, I am buying the very first Ben beer because it has to be named after you, your image and likeness, in order to have it. So it's on me, the first one before anyone else. Thank you so much, man. It's always a pleasure.
Awesome, man. Appreciate you.
What would we do without Ben? I mean, really. The guy just brings fantastic content all the time. If you don't read him regularly, you're an idiot. Absolute idiot. You gotta read Ben's stuff. He brings you premier content to Marquette basketball fans, the greatest fans in the world. Stay tuned this weekend. Another pod coming out. TK joining us. I'll do a little breakdown of Seton Hall Providence. Have a fantastic night.